This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 23rd of November, 2012. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 23rd of November 2012, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Mary Mitchell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. And now, what's on? Well, we've got a list here. We'll start with a very popular one. It's Love's Labour's Lost by William Shakespeare, and it's on at the Chessel Theatre from December the 1st to December the 8th. And tickets start at £10, and if you want any more information or to book your tickets, which will be very popular, so please hurry and do that, please telephone 0844 8100 887. And that bit of music was just to show you that we are still on air, so to speak. You can also book your tickets for Lovers Labour's Lost at chessaltheatre.org.uk. And the second one is Season's Greetings by Alan Ayckbourne, and that's at Cheriton Village Hall. And that's from November the 28th to 29th and 30th and December the 1st. Tickets are £7 on Wednesday, £8 on Thursday, £9 on Friday and Saturday. For tickets or information, please telephone 0844 8700 887. And then, at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, from November the 28th to December the 8th, Starlight Express. That's the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. You can telephone 023 8071 1811 for that. Then at the Anvil Basingstoke, December the 13th to January the 6th, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Further information, 01256 844 244. And then at the Winchester Guildhall, 1st and 2nd of December 2012, Designer and Maker, a two-day Christmas festival over 10 stalls for that, and it's free entry. Finally, the Theatre Royal Winchester is doing Aladdin from the 12th of December to the 6th of January. And for information for that, please telephone the box office 01962 840 440. Now, there's a special piece of interest from the Forest Forge Theatre Company, and that will be staging an audio-described performance of its annual winter show, Midnight is a Place, in December this year. Ringwood-based company Forest Forge will be beginning the tour of this year's winter show, Midnight is a Place, in early December, travelling across Hampshire, Wiltshire and Dorset to over 30 venues. For the performance at Wallington Village Hall, the play will be audio described to allow an audience with visual impairments to enjoy the work to its full. The audio described performance of Midnight is a Place will be held at Wallington Village Hall on Saturday the 15th of December at 7:30 p.m. For more information, please visit www.forestforge.co.uk/midnight. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 23rd of November at 7:36 a.m. and it begins at 4:09 p.m. And on Wednesday the 28th of November, it ends at 7:44 a.m. and begins at 4:04 p.m. If you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. Now, we go on to the front page headline stories this week. And they are MOD's £270 million worthy down development, a school for Barton Farm and a windfall for college, and Gillian's upper crust creation. So, may we have the first story behind the first headline, please, Mary?
MOD's £270 million worthy down development, blueprint for Tri-Service Training College. Plans for the £270 million redevelopment of Worthy Down Army Base into a Tri-Service Training College have reached a major milestone. The Ministry of Defence has officially lodged plans for a new Army, Royal Navy and Royal Air Force College with Winchester City Council. But there is disappointment for local people hoping for a boost in community facilities. The major revamp will more than double the number of personnel to 2,000 and secure its future as a military base at a time of defence cuts. It's the biggest military development in Winchester since the opening of Sir John Moore Barracks at Littleton and the departure from Peninsula Barracks in the mid-1980s. The plans have been welcomed by the local MP and a city councillor, but hopes of extra facilities have been dashed. Under the plans, up to 92 new homes for service families will be built on farmland off Connaught Road. Most buildings inside the camp will go to make way for new barracks, mess buildings, classrooms, offices and welfare facilities. Some buildings will be up to four stories tall, although largely hidden by surrounding woodland, say military chiefs. Under the plans, students will nearly triple, from 479 to 1,350, while permanent staff will increase from 250 to 650. Proposals include a cycle route between Worthy Down and the roundabout at the A34 slip road. The MOD also plans to negotiate with the County Council and transport companies to improve bus services between Worthy Down, Winchester and Basingstoke. City Councillor Stephen Godfrey, who represents South Wanston, hailed plans for the 90-hectare site as good news in many respects. He said, "We hope we will get greater cooperation between the MOD and community in shared use of facilities." There are currently no plans to make the MOD-owned farmland next to South Wanston Recreation Ground available for a burial ground, allotments or football field, as requested by parish chiefs. Nor are there proposals for a former railway to become a cycle route between South Wanston and Winchester. Military chiefs say a legal agreement with the tenant farmer make these impossible. Debbie Found, clerk to South Wanston Parish Council, said there are no opportunities for us, which is a shame. Winchester and Chandlersford MP Steve Bryant welcomed the huge investment. He said, "I'm due to receive a full briefing before Christmas on the outline plans and will be using that to leverage as much in the way of positive community outcomes as possible." In the outline application, it says there are believed to be sufficient spare spaces at South Wanston Primary and Henry Beaufort Secondary School to cope with the extra 90 homes. But military chiefs admit there is likely to be increased pressure on local services and are prepared, if necessary, to make financial contributions for improvements.
And what's the story behind this second headline story, please?
Well, this is two stories, really. A school for Barton Farm and a windfall for Sparshot College. Building work on a new primary school is set to start as soon as the first homes are built on farmland at the edge of Winchester, probably in 2015. Developer Carlo Holmes is obliged to provide land and cash for a two-form entry primary as part of permission for 2,000 homes at Barton Farm, the biggest single housing scheme in the city's history. It will also provide fields for Henry Beaufort Secondary School to expand on the other side of Andover Road North, which is to be closed with traffic diverted through the giant housing estate. Communities Secretary Eric Pickles last month gave permission for the controversial scheme after a planning battle dating back to the 1990s. Mike Emmett, director of Carla Homes, said that construction of the primary was planned to start in the first phase of house building, probably in 2015. He said, "It will be provided at the outset of the development. The agreement is the school will be up and running by the 250th occupation. The county council will start building the school pretty much the same time as we build the first houses. And two Hampshire colleges are set for a multi-million pound boost to encourage economic growth. Sparshot College, near Winchester, will receive £5.8 million to refurbish engineering workshops and to create new facilities for vocational learners. Fareham College will get £9.8 million for a new centre of excellence for engineering and manufacturing technologies at the Solent Enterprise Zone in South Hampshire. The investment is part of a £17.3 million investment for colleges across the South East. Sparshot College Principal Tim Jackson said, "We are delighted to receive this grant towards our investment programme in sports, motor vehicle and engineering facilities. These funds recognise and support our commitment to providing inspiring and industry-relevant working spaces, facilities for learners."
And a third story, please, Sheila.
Gillian's Upper Crust Creation. Food lovers were in pie heaven as budding chefs took part in a charity bake-off in Winchester. The Hyde Tavern in Hyde Street held its lip-smacking annual pie competition, raising nearly £250 for charity. The event took place on Sunday, November the 18th, and saw 20 pies entered, with two lucky representatives of the Women's Institute on hand to judge them. Janet Theodore, landlady of the tavern, said, "They were very thorough. They had great big clipboards and they were extremely professional about it. It was just a lovely day and we all enjoyed ourselves." Top dishes included mouth-watering chicken and chorizo, a veggie delight of red onion, feta and beetroot, and the eventual winner from Jill Fitzpatrick, a pie from Quebec in Canada based on potato and spicy pork. This was the third competition the pub has hosted, and proceeds will go to Winchester-based music therapy charity Key Changes. And this is accompanied by a photograph of smiling Gillian Fitzpatrick celebrating winning first prize.
And that concludes the front page headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Aburrow, Lorna Aburrow, née Parvin, peacefully at home in Lyme Regis, aged 84. Allen, Philip Allen, formerly of Sheffield, South Yorkshire, aged 77. Bayliss, Christine Ann Bayliss. Dillon, Heather Mary Dillon, peacefully aged 90. Gravely, Ken Gravely, aged 90. Hewitt, Dave Hewitt, suddenly aged 43. Howick, Susan née Livingston Howick. Jones, Sylvia née Sheen Jones, peacefully in hospital. Kitchen, Rosemary Rosie Kitchen, aged 66, following a brave battle with cancer. MacDonald, Peter Fraser MacDonald, peacefully at home in Romsey, aged 66. Watters, David John Watters, at home in Bude, aged 71. And finally, Rona, Stanislaw Rona, peacefully in Winchester, aged 87. Now it's Christian comment, read by Mary.
God loves a cheerful giver, the Bible tells us, yet there are fewer giving in this country than there used to be. Many people will have had fun in fundraising for the Children in Need appeal, as you can read elsewhere in the Hampshire Chronicle. But I recently read that the total sum given to charities in the UK fell by 20% in the last year. It also said that the proportion of the population giving to charities had decreased slightly. A report commissioned by the Charities Aid Foundation, or CAF, with research carried out by Professor Sarah Smith, pointed out that the proportion of giving amongst the younger age groups was falling. Of course, many people give in a way that does not involve it being measured by CAF, and especially many young people give time and talent. There's a lot of community support, which is not recorded in bureaucratic files. Yet generosity is an important virtue, and it is not only God who loves a cheerful giver. We all like people who have an openness of heart mirrored by an open pocket. It's a very attractive virtue, and one which we wish for our younger people. So how can we help? The first thing is to feel grateful for how much we have. Often, those involved in fundraising have been those who have been able to get involved in communities that are less privileged than their own. This makes them want to help. Sadly, what we see on our televisions does not seem to bring home how rich we are. Statistics do not seem to make us grateful that we are amongst the richest in the world. Meeting people who are in need underlines our privilege and makes us want to make a difference. I really admire all those involved in bringing young people and those less privileged together. The more opportunities there are for that, the better. The second thing is to make sure we're not always comparing ourselves with those better off than ourselves, so we feel a chip on our shoulder. If generosity is attractive, then envy is equally unattractive. The third thing is to realise how much we have after we have given. Jesus' story of the widow who gave a small amount, 2 mites in the old translation, but which was all her wealth, was meant to silence those boasting that they had given larger sums, as they also had much more left. We should feel sorry for those who feel too poor to give, however much they have, and celebrate those who are rich enough to share their time, talents, or money. And that was by Terry E. Hemming.
We have 13 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, John Duckworth says, "Hospital's fine, but where will it go? Sir, your issue of November the 8th reported on the hunt for a site for a proposed new hospital, which is good news both for cancer patients and exponents of Keynesian or New Deal types of expenditure to lift us out of our present economic malaise. It may well be of some size, given the examples outside Basingstoke and Salisbury, and even though those close to a selected site may applaud the beneficent intentions promoting its construction, they may object to its siting next to a small village such as Mittledever, where it might be construed as giving a green light to Eagle Star's ambition for a new town there. Excuse me. As the Secretary of State has stated that the Pump Lane Valley just north of Winchester is ripe for development, and it has excellent transport links and no planning objections which can be made to stand up, then surely the farmland on the north of the valley, opposite and recharacterised by the new suburb on the south side, should be considered in priority to other sites, which may elicit vociferous and time-delaying planning battles. John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop."
Befriending Service needs volunteers. Bruce White writes, "Sir, I wish to follow up on Canon Rowley Ream's recent Christian comment. As coordinator of the Mental Health Befriending Service in Winchester, I see part of my job as seeking to reduce the amount of stigmatisation suffered by those with mental health issues. In connection with this, I'd like to thank all those who attended our WOW, Wellness Over Winchester, conference in St. Peter's Pastoral Centre. Over 60 delegates attended from all walks of life to experience 3 excellent presentations related to mental health issues, enjoy lunch and network together. We also heard from 3 befrienders who told how they came to be volunteers. Hopefully such events can assist to reduce the stigma of those of us with mental health issues can still experience. The service needs more befrienders who can make a real difference to someone who may feel isolated. If you're interested, please call me on 01962 871 710. That is Winchester 871 710. Or mhb@waca.org.uk. Bruce White, Coordinator, Mental Health Befriending Service."
GCSE problem 1-4 and by Ofqual, writes Ian Tate, councillor for St Michael Ward. Sir, in her desire to score political points on the problems with English GCSE, Lib Dem Councillor Jackie Porter, who wrote on November the 15th, seems to ignore that the whole problem appears to be one for Ofqual, and some would say of Ofqual's making and not Michael Gove. If Councillor Porter was so concerned, then reference to the Ofqual website would help. We believe the design of the qualification, combined with the accountability system, put teachers in an unfair position. Acknowledging the design problems, Ofqual will be taking regulatory action to minimise risk of the problems recurring in 2013. It is ludicrous for Lib Dems to say Michael Gove objects to pupils being taught too well. He is making a brave effort to improve standards and should be supported, not attacked. Lib Dems in the coalition support him in that, whereas our local Lib Dems continue in their bad old ways of negative politics. What was wrong with the English GCSE was for one cohort to suffer from inadequacies in the design of the examination. That's why Ofqual has agreed to free resits. That's the least they could do, but no need for council taxpayers' money to be spent correcting their errors.
Yes, Frank Adset says, council contradicts its own commitment. Sir, I write in response to the Chronicle report November the 8th that Hampshire County Council plans to bar wind turbines from its land. Such plans contradict the council's own commitment to reduce CO2 emissions in line with national targets to combat climate change. We must hope wiser views prevail. Given all the land under HCC's control, a portion must surely be suitable for wind turbines, and the income generated could help reduce the impact of cuts to frontline services. In this way, HCC could reduce its CO2 emissions and help combat climate change. Frank Adset, Manor Road, Durley.
Ian Travers Bolton writes, ungracious conduct of election loser. Sir, congratulations to the independent candidate Simon Hayes on his election as Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner under the supplementary vote system. It was a pity that another leading candidate, who should know better, was so ungracious, bitter, and personally critical after the result was announced. They say a picture paints a thousand words, and the losing candidate's face on the BBC News did just that. I was dismayed at the time that his party chose what was suggested to be the wrong candidate in terms of age, past tainted public profile, a quasi-military agenda and running mate, and, amazingly, until late in his campaign, without a valid Hampshire residence. Even with a small electoral turnout, democracy has spoken, and in this election, it was a non-party political choice. Ian Travers Bolton, Windmill Hill, Alton.
City Council being led by the nose. Jeff Brutie writes, Sir, it is apparent to anybody who attended or has read notes of the proceedings of the public examination of the local plan that Winchester City Council is being led by the nose by Carla Holmes, and that the Section 106 agreement between them with respect to the Barton Farm development carries little weight and few safeguards. The lure of the new school, the cash from Carla, and the promise of social housing mean monitoring will be minimal. Carla, or whoever they sell onto, as they surely will be able to develop the site to maximise profit with scant or no eco measures and recoup some of the expense incurred fighting the many public inquiries enforcing it through. Hampshire County Council is also mesmerised by the lure of cash from Carla. At the last inquiry, they performed a volte-face regarding traffic at the Andover Road Junction and Wellhouse Lane and made the mind-boggling assertion that 2,000 houses and consequent addition of at least 3,000 cars could be mitigated by a few paltry works and would have a negligible effect on the traffic in Winchester. They are also the recipients of a £4 million government grant to deliver sustainable transport towns. In their own words, they plan to use it to set up a project team to procure key services from external specialists to carry out traffic surveys and develop a brand and logo for promotional activities. All this means is that, like previous schemes that have come to naught, a lot of taxpayers' money will be wasted, and apart from imposing a 20-mile-per-hour limit, which will cost little, virtually nothing will change, and traffic will slow down, polluting the atmosphere even more. And that letter was from Geoff Brutie of Manningford Close, Winchester.
Adrian M.B. Bates complains about political ineptness. Sir, now we have an official we did not know we needed and have no idea what his job is or exactly how he is accountable to us, the public. Could we, his reluctant electorate, ask that your good offices pose some questions on our behalf? Clearly the new police and crime commissioner has a challenge ahead and we must wish him well in that respect. But we do need much more understanding of this post if it is to earn our respect and trust. How do we contact his office? What exactly are his objectives, such that we can make an eventual and useful assessment of his achievements or lack of them? How will he report to us, i.e. his employers and assessors? How many staff will he have at his disposal? What will be the total cost per annum of his office, salaries, pension contributions, expenses, accommodation, etc.? Cynically, I doubt we'll ever be allowed to know all these things, but one can but ask. As to the introduction of this post to an unsuspecting public, surely it is an omni-shambles of political ineptness, now the standard by which all other farces can be judged. Adrian M.B. Bates, Church Street, Mitchell Dever.
And another letter about the election for Police and Crime Commissioner, this one from Christopher Pankhurst, entitled Commissioner Role Lacks Legitimacy. Sir, in the election for Police and Crime Commissioner, the successful candidate received only 27,197 votes from an electorate of 1,448,374. In an election where the turnout was 15%, lowest of any election in recorded history in this area. Additionally, although exact figures have not been given, the number of spoiled ballots was some 10 times higher than normal. The new commissioner has therefore won the ballot technically, but because of a combination of the record low turnout and the record number of spoiled ballots, he cannot claim a fully democratic mandate. The turnout cannot be brushed aside simply as apathy or ignorance. A very large number of people regard the election of commissioners as a deeply regrettable move which will propel Britain along the path to a politicised police force. The turnout and number of spoilt ballots can only reflect this dissatisfaction. When the commissioner discusses matters with the chief constable, who will have satisfied all the necessary requirements of the appointment process, he should remember he lacks democratic legitimacy. In any conflict of views, the chief constable will be the person with democratic authority. Christopher Pankhurst, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
And another letter on the same topic. No need for these US-style positions, writes David Selby. Sir, in your last edition, several letters urged readers to vote in the PCC election for different reasons. Sarah Robinson's letter looked like a copy of coalition propaganda. A protest vote, as Terence Morris suggested, is difficult with so many candidates. And while I had some sympathy for Michael Fielding's view, it does not mean we have to vote because we have the right to. The PCC might hold the Chief Constable to account, but who holds the PCC to account and against what criteria? The fact they can be removed at an election is not the answer. MPs are elected, but were never held to account until recently. Misuse of funds was their undoing. In outsourcing police activities, PCCs will be awarding contracts. Who will be scrutinising how these are awarded and what connection they might have, however tenuous, with the contractor? Sarah Robinson states that the public will have a direct say in how the money is spent. With two large cities, a detached island, and one of the biggest counties in the country, I very much doubt it. Think of the logistics. It would be impossible to meet every parish and town council, in addition to the city and district councils, and these are our elected representatives. Individuals will stand no chance unless they belong to the party of the winning candidate. And I write this before I know the result of our election. If the PCC is able to meet large representative groups with their very different needs and demands, it is likely that there will be a lot of dissatisfied people. I am yet to be convinced of the need for these American-inspired posts, bringing with them that extra layer of bureaucracy that the present government has said it is trying to eliminate, writes David Selby of West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
And Freddie Crabb, a retired major, writes quite another angry letter on the same subject, headed Policing and Politics Should Not Be Mixed. Sir, my vote was not used. Politics and policing cannot mix. Police authorities are political. PCCs reliant on political support cannot be independent. Politicians arranged things to ensure only those with political backing or wealth could apply. Such people have no interest in the well-being of those most in need of police protection, assuming a police force led by a person of high integrity, courage and morality. In my view, they are rare. I have an outstanding complaint against the chief constable who failed to investigate police crimes I reported to him. The police authority also failed to act when I complained about that. The crimes were not investigated, and the chief constable went to a better post. I see no possibility that the post of PCC will have any influence on what to me is a corrupt system. It will fail. Freddie Crabb, retired major, Hensting Lane, Oslebury.
And John Good writes, My kind of town. Sir, I have been selling poppies in Alsford for over 20 years and would like to give a big thank you to the townsfolk for their pleasant attitude and kind donations to the poppy appeal. Also a big thank you to the ladies of Nationwide and the Community Centre for the coffee and biscuits. I remain your humble poppy seller, John Good, Colmore, Alton.
Lack of information on PCC candidates, writes Andrew Parker. Sir, may I give a blind person's view of the recent elections for police and crime commissioners? I've lived in Winchester since 1995 and always have a postal vote for elections, but have only been visited twice during the past 17 years, once for county council and once for the local elections. I received, towards the end of October, some information and a telephone number to ring for booklets regarding the PCC elections. I rang once a week over a three-week period. On the second occasion, there was a recorded message saying that nothing would be available until the next day, Saturday, November the 3rd. When I made my third call on November the 5th, having pressed to get through to the Home Office and recorded my postcode, the number takes you to an automated switchboard where you have to record the information required, I had to repeat the information I had given during the first call to the automated switchboard. This time it stated that once all relevant details had been recorded, I would receive the information booklets, which I had requested in Braille and on audio CD within 5 working days. Like other correspondents, I'm not convinced as to the need for these elections. The UK is much smaller than the USA, and what works in America does not necessarily work here. I only received information in standard print for one of the 6 candidates, Liberal Democrats. A friend has told me that apart from a survey, she received no information at all from any of the 6. Many will have voted with next to nothing in terms of detail. It looks as though the authorities responsible for these elections left things until the last possible moment. And that was from Andrew Parker of Chesil Street, Winchester.
And a change of subject. Mr. Isa Meyer says the expanded market damages the character of the high street. Sir, judging by the number of letters about Winchester's street market, is still an issue. The expanded market does not just damage the character of the high street, it also restricts access to established retail outlets. Many shops have seen a severe reduction in turnover because of reduced visibility and access. It would be interesting to hear the views of BID, as their main role is to support retail business. Over-commercialisation is a blight on this country. Winchester should be protected from this kind of thing. I must make it clear I'm not against regular established market stalls, such as those on Wednesdays and weekends. That's Isermeyer, Chester Road, Winchester, and it's accompanied by a photograph of a row of market stalls with their blue and yellow awnings. I must say, they're actually looking rather attractive.
Thank you very much. And that's the end of our letters to the editor. Thank you to all concerned writing in. We're on to your say. We went out and we asked passers-by the following. Should women be able to become bishops and why? Noel has the answers.
Right, well, Angela Ayres, 62, retired nursery school teacher of Church Lane, Kingsworthy, said, "Everyone should get an equal shot at whatever job they go for, and I think it would be quite nice to see a few women bishops." And Natalie Buckley, 35, artist of St Cross Road, St Cross, said, "Yes, women should definitely be given every opportunity to become bishops, as they're exactly the same as men. The church needs to set a better example to young women." And Rex Williamson, 52, carer of Trussell Crescent, Week, said, "This world is not just a man's world, but a woman's world as well. So far as I'm concerned, there should be equality. There's no reason at all they shouldn't be." And Jen Whitehead, 29, unemployed of Compton Road, Winchester, said, "I think they should, because this issue is about fairness. It's about giving people the same opportunities regardless of sex. So women should definitely be given the same chance."
And now we're going back through the years and our dusty old files for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Sheila.
25 years ago, 1987. Evidence of a Roman fort has been found by archaeologists on the Brooks site. The remains are believed to date from the late 1st century AD and may be part of a military fort on one of the city's first Roman settlements. Professor Martin Biddle, director of Winchester's research unit, said learning about its origins was one of the most important aims of the dig. It might not be military, but an early religious enclosure, though it was clear the present excavation was taking place right inside it. And secondly, from 1987, Winchester councillor Patrick Davies has called for vigorous opposition to Hampshire County Council's plans for speculative housing development on the old site of the Montgomery of Alamein School in Romsey Road and on its playing fields. It's a scandal that the council should be trying to give itself planning permission for up to 110 houses on this sensitive site, contrary to all accepted planning policies for Winchester, he said.
We're going back even further. 50 years ago, please, Mary.
From 1962, the National Union of Agricultural Workers' aim for a 40-hour week won vigorous backing from the delegates at annual county conference in Winchester on Saturday. Alderman W.A.J. Case, a member of the National Executive, said the union had made progress towards the £10 a week target, the recent 8 shillings award having brought the minimum up to £9 3 shillings, but little towards a 40-hour week. And another item from 1962, marketing in the USA takes more and more of the consumer's dollars while farmers get less and less. Dr. William G. Murray, Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, told a large gathering in Winchester Guildhall. He was speaking at a meeting arranged by J. Bibby and Sons in conjunction with the Soybean Council of America. Some years ago, Dr. Murray explained, the farmers were getting half the consumer's money, but today they only got 38%.
And now 100 years ago, please, Dole.
Yes, two items from 1912. The Winchester City Police on Saturday raided premises where it was alleged betting had been carried on and arrested 4 men. The case came before the city magistrates yesterday and attracted considerable interest. Edwin Wilson was charged for that he, being the occupier of a certain shop, number 18 Bridge Street, did unlawfully keep and use the shop for the purpose of betting, resorting thereto, on certain events or contingencies relating to horse racing. And the other item, 3 weeks of proverbially gloomy weather of November have been entirely favourable for every description of farm work. Very little rain has fallen, and the days have been open and mild. On some farms, wheat sowing is concluded, and on most farms, the mangels and the potatoes are also under cover, the work generally of carting the former crop having presented but few difficulties this season.
Finally, 200 years ago, Sheila.
200 years ago, 1812. The game laws are considered as a great grievance by farmers in general, and even by a great many sportsmen, because they afford the means of monopoly in the manor lords, who preserve their estates and beat up those of neighbours. In many districts, the farmers have almost exterminated the game by destroying pheasants and partridge nests and young hares. The most destructive animal is the rabbit, by its subterranean concealment and by its wonderful fecundity. And secondly, 1812. Friday, Joseph Gibson, seaman of His Majesty's ship La Loire, sentenced to suffer death for maliciously stabbing Lieutenant Croker. He suffered the sentence passed on him at Spithead. Conducted to the forecastle, he shook hands with Captain Brown and Lieutenant Croker, whose forgiveness he entreated, saying he did not intend to take the life of Lieutenant Croker, though he felt his crime deserving of punishment. He hoped his fate would be a warning.
And now editorial comment from Noel.
Right. PCC outsider with proven track record. So, the people of Hampshire have elected a police commissioner. Well, a few did. On average, only one person in seven went to the polls, although in the Winchester district it was one in five, the highest in the county. The terrible turnout is a blow to those who thought the replacing of police authorities, largely made up of county councillors, with a single person would introduce greater democracy and thus greater interest. But concerns that public indifference will undermine the authority of the commissioner are overstated. It's worth pointing out that Mr. Hayes garnered more votes than any of the individual county councillors who previously sat on the police authority. It might appear that the election of an independent was a snub for party politicians and the established process, but Mr. Hayes is a former leader of New Forest District Council, chairman of Hampshire Police Authority, as well as a former member of the Conservative Party, so hardly an outsider. It's refreshing to report good news. The multi-million pound investments at Sparshall College and by the MOD at Worthy Down, as well as the switch on of the Christmas lights, it's not only bad news that comes in threes.
And now it's First Person, read by Sheila.
First Person this week is entitled A Wee Touch of Temptation and is written by Rosemary McMullen. Woke with that Monday feeling, even though the calendar said Friday, and was not encouraged when I pulled back my curtains and saw the dreary raindrops drizzling down my window. Sometimes it's just too hard to summon up the willpower to face the day. I have a beautiful tree outside my window which mirrors my mood. Half of it is bare and bleak, while the other still enchants with elegant spare clusters of orange-red leaves. Like an aging woman, I reflect that my own autumnal charms are disappearing fast. At my computer, I avoid work by trawling through the many cruise offers that come my way and find my fingers hovering over the keys. I ring a customer advisor and are almost talked into a January cruise to the Canaries. Fantastic, half-price offer, etc., etc. Then comes the crunch, the dreaded single supplement. I say, I'll need time to think about it, and ring off. I realise that the time I've spent imagining being on that ship, planning what glamorous outfit to wear at the captain's table, has jerked me out of my misery. Who needs reality when fantasy will do just as well? And I've saved a fortune. Not a Scot for nothing, I hear you say. I was brought up to think that spoiling yourself is a sin deserving of hellfire. I decide to risk the flames and look for bargains. As it happens, a voucher scheme offer promises a hot stone massage for half price. The devil prods my neck and the resulting twinge has me accepting in seconds. Granny's ghost shakes her head and I tell her I'll put it off till the new year. As she departs, the imp reminds me that a pleasure deferred is a pleasure doubled and grins wickedly. By now I am on the slippery slope and no longer in the mood to resist temptation. Years ago I saw Cirque du Soleil in Auckland and was awestruck. Skipping home under those amazingly clear skies and enormous bright stars, I felt I could fly. Nothing could be more ideal to raise my spirits than to see them again. A satanic imp had obviously planted the ad in the paper, which jumped out at me. I hastily shoved the page under my coffee table. Better to be sensible. Grandmother's ghost patted me on the head approvingly, and I put it to the back of my head. But that little imp had a masterstroke up his sleeve. As I was doing my usual moan about single supplements stopping me, a married friend said she'd like to come. It had never occurred to me to ask. So here I am, no longer hating the idea of the bleak and lonely midwinter, but anticipating a feast of colour, music, and amazingly skilled acrobats. I may have to solve my Scottish conscience and appease Granny's ghost by doing penance, but for the present, that little imp and I are dancing hand in hand.
Now we continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Mary.
Council steps up ash alert. Ash trees in Hampshire are being monitored by the County Council for signs of a deadly disease. Trees on the highway will continue to be inspected as part of the Council's safety inspection programme. Council arboriculturalists will also be on alert for signs of the disease on any ashes. There are currently no confirmed cases in Hampshire, and the nearest is believed to be at Horsham in Sussex. Planting of the common ash tree has been suspended on the council's land holdings and in any work being carried out, such as planting hedgerows along rights of way. Councillor Mel Kendall, deputy leader and executive member for Environment and Transport, said, "We are just as concerned about this issue and its implications for Hampshire as the government is for the whole of the country. Anyone who identifies signs of the disease in species of ash should report it to the Forestry Commission by emailing plant.health@forestry.gsi.gov.uk and also notify ARB, that's ARB, at hants.gov.uk.
Age UK launches two new services. Lady Alison Wakeham and the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Ernie Jeffs, joined volunteers and clients of Aid UK Winchester to mark the introduction of two new services for older residents. Help at Home will support people who want to stay in their own homes, while the new Information and Advice Service offers confidential, free and impartial help on issues for people over 55. Said patron Lady Wakeham, "So many older people in our area already rely on Aid UK Winchester, and these new services mean we can now do even more to improve the quality of their lives and those of their families. Help at Home offers practical help to those over 55 who want to remain at home and who need help because of frailty, disability or illness. Clients keep the same helper, enabling them to get to know each other. Carol Pennell runs the service and can be reached on 01962 871 726 or 871712. I'll say those numbers again. 01962 871 726 or 871 712. The new Information and Advice Service is now up and running, offering information on many things, including pensions, welfare, benefits, utility bills, and residential care. Staff are available by telephoning 01962 871 725. That's 01962 871 725, or calling into the Age UK Winchester office between 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. Monday to Friday. The office is in the Colebrook Centre next to Colebrook Street car park. Philip Vose, chairman of Age UK Winchester, said, "The charity relies on volunteers, grants, donations, fundraising and the support of the local community to deliver its services. I believe it will be a great boon to our older residents and their families, but a major challenge for us to run, so we would welcome new volunteers to come and join us and work with some of our most vulnerable residents. Anyone who can help should call David Nielsen on 01962 871 727. That's 01962 871 727.
pushing ahead with plans to redevelop old Peugeot site. Developers are pushing ahead with plans for housing on the site of a former Winchester garage. Bargate Homes has submitted an application to the City Council to build 14 homes at the Southgate Peugeot site in St Cross Road. It includes demolishing most of the existing buildings, but keeping a coach house built in the 1860s. The City of Winchester Trust campaigned to preserve the old buildings because they were an important feature in the city. Angus Cook, managing director of Fair Oak-based Bargate Homes, said they took this into account and consulted the Trust. We went to see them with our plans and they were very well received. Their views always form part of our process and we always see them if we are putting in an application. This is a prime location and an incredibly important site. It is one of the last parts of this area to be improved and is overdue for it. The coach house will be converted into two homes, one four-bed and one three-bed, while three four-bed, seven two-bed and two three-bed dwellings would be built along with parking. The Southgate Group folded in late 2011 with more than 100 jobs lost across Hampshire and Dorset, and efforts to find a buyer to continue the garage failed. It is currently being used by Timberline Furniture, which moved onto the site on a short-term licence in July. The application will be decided by a council planning committee in the next few months, and this is accompanied by an artist's view of the proposed development, which appears to fit in very well with surrounding buildings.
Police Commissioner to tackle reoffending. Simon Hayes has been sworn in as Hampshire's first elected Police and Crime Commissioner. Mr Hayes, who beat ex-Tory Minister Michael Mates in last Thursday's poll, swore an oath on Tuesday vowing to cut crime, giving victims a voice, pursue justice and not interfere with police operations. Starting yesterday, he took up his £85,000 a year post, which replaces Hampshire Police Authority. Mr Hayes, who is chairman of Crime Stoppers in Hampshire, wants to reduce reoffending through initiatives such as restorative justice, where criminals face their victims. The low turnout nationally and in Hampshire of only 15% is causing concerns. The Electoral Commission said it was a concern for everyone who cares about democracy. Lieutenant Colonel Chris Branigan, Mr Mates' running mate, and who lives in St Cross, said he thought their campaign failed because controversy around Mr Mates distracted voters from his policies. He said it came down to some deflection towards the character of the candidate rather than the issues which detracted from the policy discussion. We were disappointed as we won on first past the post. I would not call the format flawed, but we ended up with candidates having a second shot.
And on a slightly related subject, Neighbourhood Watch success praised. Police chiefs have paid tribute to Neighbourhood Watch coordinators in Hampshire in helping to cut crime. At the Winchester and East Hampshire coordinators meeting on Thursday, November the 15th, around 150 people packed into the venue at Perrin School, Alsford. Margaret Filley, president of the Hampshire Neighbourhood Watch Association, said, "This is a very special opportunity for us all to come together and network, but also to communicate with our police commander colleagues." Assistant Chief Constable David Pride of Hampshire Constabulary said, "I've never been to a Neighbourhood Watch event with a turnout this big. There are 796 watches in Winchester and East Hampshire and 4,700 watches across the whole of the county." Chief Inspector James Fulton, Winchester and East Hampshire District Commander, said, "We have taken some huge steps forward in tackling crime, and it's due in no small part to Margaret." He said that the vehicle crime had dropped by 20% over the past year in Hampshire, and acknowledged that advances in technology had played a part in that figure, but said much of it was due to the work of the Neighbourhood Watch. Mr Fulton said, "It's been a real success story. Last year, 2010 to 2011, we saw a significant fall in crime. Violent crime was down 15% last year. We've had some rises too. Dwelling burglaries rose by 15% in Winchester and East Hampshire, but we've had only one burglary each day on average, so it is not as if it's a big problem." He also urged the coordinators to continue their work and to take advantage of social media. He said, "We're completely reliant on the likes of yourselves feeding information into us. We would be sitting in the dark without your help."
Councillors hit with 1.4 million green tax. Hampshire in bottom half of energy league table. Hampshire County Council has been hit by a 1.4 million green tax for services such as street lighting and heating schools. Large public and private organisations have to pay a levy for every tonne of carbon emissions as a result of electricity and gas used. And the authority is ranked in the bottom half of the first National Energy Efficiency League table. Now, the Conservative-controlled council is drawing up a new strategy with the aim of cutting its $15.7 million energy bill after ditching plans for solar power. Cabinet chiefs also ruled out wind turbines on council-owned land, arguing that the benefits don't currently outweigh adverse impact on the landscape. In the long term, the authority could sell e-power from its three energy-from-waste incinerators. However, it's locked into a contract with Veolia Environmental Services to manage its waste until 2023. It sells the electricity and pockets the proceeds. Meanwhile, council chiefs have been warned they will have to factor in carbon taxes alongside the escalating energy prices in setting budgets. A report from three chief officers to Cabinet said, "As energy prices increase, the County Council could be using a higher percentage of its total budget for energy. This means less money for services." The county, which has 670 sites, including schools, offices, libraries and care homes, had to pay a carbon tax of $1.4 million just for 2011-12, and warned of the reputational risk from the league table, although it failed to say how it scored. In fact, Hampshire is among 17 organisations jointly ranked in the 14th lowest place, with a weighted score of 943 for the 2010-11. Southampton City Council performed better with a score of 1,012. Winchester and other Hampshire district councils were not included. The compulsory scheme requires large organisations which use more than 6,000 megawatts of electricity per year to measure and report carbon emissions. It gives credit for installing smart meters and complying with Carbon Trust standards of energy management. Hampshire produced 88,482 tonnes of carbon emissions last year and used meters to monitor 5% of its energy use against 100% for highest-ranked organisations. By comparison, Southampton, with a smaller estate, was responsible for 27,604 tonnes of emissions. It had meters for 8%.
And another green story, call for higher parking charges. Environmental group wants to reduce traffic. Green campaigners have urged Winchester City Council to make car parking more expensive in the city centre. Environmental groups told a council cabinet meeting higher prices would reduce traffic, encourage more use of the park and ride system, and cut the city's carbon footprint. It came as the Cabinet last Wednesday approved three-hour parking in some of the inner car parks. That's Chesil Street Surface, Chesil Multistory, Derngate, Worthy Lane, Coach Park and Cattle Market. The cost will be £2.70, cheaper than the increased charge of £3.50 for 3 hours in the more central car parks such as the Brooks. 4 hours in the central car parks will increase from £4 to £4.50, compared to the freezing at £4 for 4 hours in inner car parks such as the Chesils and Derngate. The council wants to encourage people to think about where they park, to park further out, and hence avoid bringing vehicles into the congested one-way system. Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth welcomed the increases, but disputed whether they would achieve much. He said, "The proposed level of car park charges gives us little hope there will be an effect on the traffic in the city centre. There will be at a price at which that will change, but our evidence suggests not at this sort of level. Phil Gagg of Winchester Action on Climate Change added, "We very much support the idea of encouraging the use of park and ride and providing a cleaner environment for pedestrians and cyclists, but we do worry about the level of pollution in Winchester. There needs to be a better balance between facilities for pedestrians and facilities for cars. The cost of park and ride will be frozen, as will free 30 minutes in street parking bays. Officers believe the changes could increase council income by between £60,000 and £100,000 per year. But Councillor Robert Hutchison said there should be a much larger price difference between park and ride and central car parks to encourage more use of the former. He said someone coming to Winchester for 4 hours can pay £3.50 to park in Chesil Street and pay £3 for park and ride. That is no incentive at all. Park and ride is severely underused, with lots and lots of empty buses."
Stepping out for little Abe. Around 100 people stepped out on Saturday to help raise money for a little boy to have a life-changing operation. Abe Astor, too, was born with a type of cerebral palsy that restricts his movement, and so he walks with the aid of a frame. His mum and dad, Lee and Gavin, are hoping to raise £50,000 to pay for an operation in the United States that will allow him to walk normally. Friends, family and supporters gathered in Abbey Gardens in Winchester to raise around £300. So far, the family has raised around £20,000. Lee of Manor Farm Green, Twyford, said, "It was amazing. As a family, you never imagine you will have to fundraise. Children in Need on Friday night really brought it home that there are all these families fighting for something. It is strange to think it is us, but we have to just get on with it and do what we have to do." Lee was thankful for the widespread support the family is getting. Wild Sports of Jury Street produced T-shirts free of charge, and Melissa Roche and Sarah Kirk of Yellow Dot Nursery in Ampfield were due to run the Gosport Half Marathon on Sunday. And this is accompanied by two delightful pictures, one of Abe Astor II with parents Lee and Gavin and his sister Thea in a little group together, young parents with their children in their arms, and then another big picture of over 30 people gathered together, very mixed, very young, old, all sorts of people, children and an elderly woman in a wheelchair, all gathered in Abbey Gardens to support the family.
Business as usual, say hotel bosses. Hotel Devan says its trading will be unaffected by the decision of its parent company to call in administrators. The chain, which started in Southgate Street, Winchester, in 1994, and with its sister brand, Malmaison, now has 26 boutique hotels across the UK. Parent company MWB suspended trading in its shares a fortnight ago, saying that they could soon be worthless. Talks with creditors are ongoing. In a statement, Malmaison and Hotel Devan today said they noted the statement from its shareholders, MWB Group Holdings PLC, appointing an administrator to its business. The statement said, "This development has no impact on Malmaison and Hotel Devan trading, with both subsidiary businesses performing strongly, with both sales growing and profits ahead by 14% over the last four-month period. Under the guidance of a new management team, the business has benefited from the strategic review implemented at the start of the year, which continues to deliver operational benefits and provide exciting opportunities going into 2013. Gary Davis, chief executive of Malmaison and Hotel Devan, said today, "The Malmaison and Hotel Devan businesses are great brands, and we continue to invest in the estate. We have a talented team who provides consistently high standards of service, as demonstrated by the excellent customer feedback we receive. Both businesses have performed well this year, and we continue to see improvements in trading. Occupancy continues to improve, with resilient room rates and recent management initiatives continue to deliver growth and margin improvements. We look forward to the exciting Christmas season and a successful 2013.
Hyde's key role in the history of Winchester. The history of Winchester's oldest suburb is the subject of a new book out this month, Hyde, From Dissolution to Victorian Suburb, published by Victorian Heritage Press, is the result of 4 years' research by Dr. Chris Grover, an academic at Winchester University. Hyde has played a key role in the history of Winchester, starting from the foundation of Hyde Abbey, the final resting place of Alfred the Great. And there's a photograph accompanying the article of part of Hyde Abbey, which was a victim of Henry VIII's purge of the monasteries. Social institutions like the Bridewell, Hyde Abbey School and the Refuge for Penitent Women were established later. The book focuses on the effects that politics, economics and social change had on the small community of Hyde, looking at a number of influential people and places. Dr. Grover, a senior lecturer in the Faculty of Business, Law and Sport, said, "There is a secret part of Winchester which is steeped in politics, religious persecution and family struggles. The modern shape of Hyde can be traced to the deeds of a few powerful families, and I'm delighted one of their descendants is able to attend the launch." Dr. Grover will give a free public lecture about this period in Hyde's history at the launch at Winchester Business School, West Downs, Romsey Road, on November the 28th. The event will be attended by Torquil Sligo Young, a direct descendant of William Barrow Simmons, MP for Winchester, from 1865 to 1880. Copies of books will be presented to representatives of local organisations who have helped with the preparation of the book, sponsored by the William Allen Young Charitable Trust.
Politics now. This is the Westminster Diary, written by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. "Hard as it is to believe, the Christmas lights are up again. Winchester's wonderful Christmas market is open, and the opportunity for an MP to fall flat on the ice in Cathedral Close is there for all to see. I must admit, I have always loved the season of goodwill, partly because I'm a sentimental old fool, and partly because I'm a Christian, and the Christmas story is a pretty neat one I never tire of hearing. But it's since I've had children that it's really come alive for me, and the sight of my two at the opening of the ice rink this evening, on Thursday, will really kick-start Christmas 2012. Although the signs are encouraging, we need Christmas this year to be a good one for our local retailers. I was pleased to see the BID re-elected to continue its work promoting Winchester, and hope that the shoppers flock with their skates and their wallets to what is fast becoming the Christmas city. I'm looking forward to chatting with many of our business people when I address the annual business breakfast in January, and to seeing them sooner when I finally, usually Christmas Eve, get the chance to hit the shops myself. It was a pleasure to welcome Home Secretary Theresa May to one of my association events in London last week, and to press her on the government's plans to get rid, once and for all, of the Muslim cleric Abu Qatada. Believe me, if I could put him on a plane, I'd do it personally, but this country respects the rule of law, and it is right that we do. What we have to do is appeal and ensure that the courts accept Jordan's arguments around the use of evidence gained under torture." It was very reassuring to hear the Home Secretary's determination to do just that, and I'll back her all the way. It was fascinating earlier this month to visit a large youth offender institution in Wigan, Youth Offender Institute's Hindley, with the Justice Committee as part of our inquiry into youth justice. There are some really good things happening inside our secure estate, but there are far too many stuck on the revolving door, and we must do so much better in pursuing diversion projects to steer young people away from the criminal justice system in the first place. If Hampshire's new Police and Crime Commissioner, who I'm warmly welcome to his post, can work with me on that, then we'll all be better off, in my opinion. Finally, I'm working to secure a debate in Parliament early next year on the subject of breast cancer in connection with my work as chairman of the all-party group, following my meeting with the Prime Minister on the subject this week. If you or a fellow or a family member have experience of our screening programme locally or treatment received and would feel able to share it with me, I would love to hear from you."
And this is an obituary for Lieutenant Colonel Simon Freeland, MBE, Royal Engineers, a career soldier whose generous spirit and sense of fun will be sorely missed. Lieutenant Colonel Simon Freeland, who lived in Sutton Scotney, has died suddenly at home, aged 55. Born in Guildford, he won a scholarship to Reading School before joining the army as an officer serving in the Royal Engineers. He had postings in Germany, Northern Ireland, England, Scotland, and Florida, USA. He was serving in Andover when he died. He commanded a TA regiment in Scotland and held senior staff posts, mainly connected with TA and reserve forces. Simon was a dedicated supporter of scouting, playing an active part in 14th Winchester Scout Group for many years. His funeral service, held in Winchester Cathedral, was a formal military funeral with a bearer party and general salute provided by the Royal Engineers. Leaders from his scout group provide an honour guard for Simon in the vigil before the service. Simon is being buried in the family plot in County Antrim. He had many interests, including military history, leading battlefield tours, and visiting military graveyards. He enjoyed rowing and rugby, supporting Gloucester. Great fun to be with a sense of humour and a generous spirit. He will be greatly missed by his wife Fiona and their four sons. Donations in his memory can be made to BLESMA, that's the British Limbless Ex-Servicemen's Association, care of Richard Steele and Partners, City Road, Winchester.
Waltham plots the future. Bishop's Waltham residents have taken an active role in shaping their town with the help of Monopoly houses. At the Jubilee Hall, a series of detailed maps were laid out and people were invited to place Monopoly houses, shops, community buildings and leisure facilities on it as they saw fit. The initiative was part of the 20-year plan that will decide development in the parish, including 500 new homes. It was organised by the Neighbourhood Plan Steering Group, who have been appointed to draw up the plan to give residents greater influence over its future. Chairman Robert Shield said, "We were surprised and pleased at the options offered, some of them really quite innovative. We shall be considering all the ideas, as well as the many comments received, in a number of focus groups being set up early next year." Civic chiefs are keen to learn lessons from Alsford, where a packed public meeting in May was largely critical of council proposals. Bishop's Waltham hopes that public involvement at an early stage will yield a wider consensus. But there was some disappointment at Wednesday's turnout. Councillor Shield said, "There were about 60 or 70. I was expecting more, and we extended it from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m, but no more people came." The council will now assemble the data for the plan, with the first draft due by November 2014. Providing it passes an independent examination and a local referendum, it will become law and all planning applications will be obliged to adhere to it.
A dangerous footbridge closed. A Winchester footbridge over the River Itchen has been closed after it became dangerous to users. An inspection of the bridge at the foot of Blue Ball Hill showed that several deck planks had rotted. The footbridge will be completely redecked with new hardboard planks with anti-slip inserts, said a county council spokeswoman. The council is awaiting confirmation of the start date and duration of the works from the contractor.
Emily Masterminds Magic Wand Fundraiser. More than 100 youngsters attended a dance-a-thon event in aid of Winchester Hospital. Emily Mallinson, 15, a pupil at King's School, organised the 2.5-hour event to raise £600 for the Magic Wand Appeal to revamp the children's ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. She said she wanted to stage the fundraiser because the Royal Hampshire County Hospital saved the life of her sister, Abigail. "I thought I should give something back. It was a great success," said Emily, adding that King's had helped her throughout. Head teacher Sue Lawrence let Emily have the hall for free, and caretaker Steve Russell gave up his afternoon and evening to help. Among the acts taking part were Integra 8 Dance, Ready Salted, Pre-Yanker Aurora, and Emily herself, Becky Short, and lots more. Sponsors included Greggs, Buddy's Diner, Sainsbury's, C&H Fabrics, and Your Life, Your Style. And this is accompanied by a very colourful photograph of the participants who look to be from the age of 5 to teenagers.
Police use new powers to evict travellers. Police in Winchester and East Hampshire have moved on a group of travellers who set up at two unsuitable locations. For the first time in Winchester, they used Section 61 powers to twice evict the group. The travellers moved on to the park and ride at Hockley Link on Thursday, November the 1st. This led to 100 parking spaces being unavailable, and Winchester City Council took legal action. Officers received complaints about mess, nuisance and damage, which led to Chief Inspector James Fulton authorising a Section 61 dispersal notice, requiring the group to leave by a given time on Tuesday, November the 6th. The travellers left by the required time and relocated to a lay-by alongside the A32 in West Meon. Hampshire County Council Highways team were concerned for the safety of the travellers and also the impact to other road users. A further Section 61 order was issued, ordering them off by Thursday, November the 8th. Under Section 61 of the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act 1994, powers can be considered by police in the following circumstances: significant nuisance or criminal behaviour, unacceptable levels of damage to land or property to gain entry or remain, and danger to travellers from the chosen site, such as environmental health factors. Chief Inspector Fulton said, "This is the first time this notice has been issued in Winchester. Although they left without incident, they left behind rubbish and litter and damaged parking machines. The cost to clear the site and repair the damage is estimated at £4,500. I hope this swift action to move the travellers on from unsuitable locations will convey that a robust approach will be taken against encampments within legal parameters."
Thousands joined in the big switch on. Chart toppers kicked off Christmas in City. Winchester was rocking on Thursday, November the 15th, with a chart-topping band to mark the Christmas lights switch on. At the Broadway, the Hoosiers entertained the crowds while the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, did the honours with the switch on at 6 p.m. There was a slightly surreal feel to the event as the Mayor was flanked by a giant panda and Widow Twankey from the cast of Aladdin, the panto at the Theatre Royal. Despite sound difficulties, it was arguably the strongest lineup the city has seen for the ceremony, with Steve Craddock and Andy Bennett of Ocean Colour Scene also performing. Local talent came in the form of Winchester University Choir and Integrate Dance. Police and representatives of the Fire and Rescue Service were also there to spread some emergency services-style Christmas cheer in the afternoon, wishing Wintonians a happy and safe Christmas and offering advice on crime prevention and safety. The Hampshire Chronicle previously reported that councillors were banking on a bumper Christmas for the city's economy, and the thousands who attended the event seemed to confirm that. On Thursday the 22nd, a lantern parade passed through the city, arriving at the cathedral for 6:30 in time for the opening ceremony of the Christmas market and ice rink. Now in its seventh year, the market attracts in excess of 300,000 visitors annually, and is modelled on European markets such as those found in Germany. This year, the ceremony featured Japanese drummers, showcase skaters, and prizes for the best lanterns. After the Dean and the Mayor of Winchester officially opened the market and ice rink, a firework display followed. Meanwhile, police ramped up patrols. Sergeant Richard Holland of North Walls Police Station said, "We don't want to stop people from partying, but we want to make them aware of the potential consequences of irresponsible drinking. That's why we carried out extra patrols throughout and worked closely with licensed premises and the street pastors."
Pooling their resources, Hampshire Probation Trust is confident it can continue to protect the public and reduce reoffending after opening its new Winchester office. MP Steve Bryan did the honours at the office in Cromwell House, Andover Road. This is a result of 2 years planning and refurbishment, with 70 staff relocated. Managers who work with around 260 offenders from Winchester and Eastleigh will share the space with staff previously based in Middlebrook Street. It also includes the Trust's Victim Contact Unit and the Employment, Training and Education Team, which helps past offenders find work. Barry Crook, Chief Executive of the Trust, said, The merger of our two offices in Winchester is part of our strategy to ensure we bring about efficiencies without affecting our frontline services. Mr. Bryan added, "We need to remember the victims of crime and the devastating effect it has on lives. We also need to get offenders out of the revolving door of reoffending that is so damaging to society as a whole. The Probation Trust will play an important part in helping to realise these ambitions."
Talk on modern Christianity. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, is inviting all Winchester Church members to a discussion, what does it mean to live the mission of Jesus today, at Holy Trinity Church, Upper Brook Street, on Tuesday at 7:30.
Stanmore pupils hand over £700 for hospital charity, and there's a big picture of Stanmore Primary School pupils Rhys Maidment, 11, and Amy Hyde, 6, presenting a cheque for the hospital magic wand appeal to Dr. Martha Wiles at a special assembly attended by MP Steve Bryan, which saw pupils dressed in their pyjamas for children in need. And the four main people are standing surrounded by children packed together, sitting, laughing at the camera, dressed in their pyjamas. And the story says, it's no wonder these Winchester schoolchildren look ready for bed after a year of fundraising. Pupils at Stanmore Primary School raised more than £700 for Royal Hampshire County Hospital. They took part in various events to raise the funds for the hospital's magic wand appeal to refurbish the children's ward. Children presented hospital consultant Martha Wilds with the cheque while continuing their charity efforts by dressing in pyjamas for children in need. Ali Richardson, school library manager, said, "We are very proud of them. The school council decided they wanted to raise money for local children in hospital, and when we found out about the appeal, we thought that was perfect. The most popular event was Soak the Teacher, with the children throwing revolting wet sponges at staff, and they loved it." I think that means the children loved it. The staff didn't as much, as the children were very accurate. Martha came from the hospital and said she was delighted to receive the money and thanked all the children. Rhys Maidment, 11, school council chairman, said, "I'm really pleased we raised this money for such a great cause." Acting head Darren Nickerson added, "We're all delighted we raised the money, but it's a shame the children are such good sponge throwers and I got very wet. The money will go towards redecorating the ward and buying new toys for patients." Charity's success did not stop there for the school, as it raised more than £250 for children in need after pupils dressed up in their pyjamas.
Memories rekindled. The newly named Simondians Association, formerly the Old Simondians Society, welcomed the Mayor of Winchester, Frank Pearson, and Mayoress Anne Pearson as honorary guests at their annual Winchester dinner. Around 60 people attended the event at the Winchester Hotel, where memories were rekindled, and the President, Tony Pace, read Lawrence Binion's "They Shall Not Grow Old," before a toast to absent old Simondians. Replying on behalf of the college principal, Neil Hopkins said students remain, as they always were, fundamentally good and refreshingly well-intentioned. We are very proud of their achievements. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Mayor, Frank Pearson, with Jem Musselwhite, the Honorary Secretary of the Association, Nye Thomas and Tony Pace, the Presidents of the Association.
Fewer turbines will reduce the visual impact. EDF will cut number from 17 to 14. Developers of a giant wind farm in Hampshire have reduced the number of proposed turbines. EDF Energy Renewables will apply for permission for 14 instead of the 17 planned near Bullington Cross, north of Winchester. It held a public exhibition at Sutton Scotney Village Hall on Saturday that attracted around 100 people. Another, at Whitchurch Parish Hall the previous day, saw a similar number of people. The consultation included a 3D visualisation of how the wind farm would look from the surrounding area. EDF says the cut in the number of 126-metre-high turbines will reduce the visual impact and mean all turbines are some 800 metres away from the nearest non-involved homes. Dropped are the two most northerly turbines near Tufton Warren Farm and the most easterly by Freefolk Wood. The scheme, on land owned by the Janaway family at Upper Norton Farm, has attracted much opposition, especially on the grounds of spoiling the character of the countryside. City Councillor Stephen Godfrey said he was still opposed, not least because the turbines are inefficient. But County Councillor Jackie Porter, who represents the Itchen Valley Division, said she did not oppose the wind farm as the UK needed to develop alternatives to fossil fuels. Planning applications to Winchester, Basingstoke and Test Valley councils are expected by the end of the year. Darren Cuming, onshore wind development manager at EDF, said, "Since unveiling our plans to establish a wind farm at Bullington Cross, we have continued to carry out our feasibility studies and have sought community feedback. As a result, we have announced our intention to reduce the number of turbines. We believe this will create a more compact layout and result in less visually intrusive effects, both locally and in the wider landscape. Under the new proposals, 7 turbines would be located within the Planning Authority of Winchester, 4 in Basingstoke and Dean, and 3 in Test Valley." EDF says the revised proposal would have a capacity of around 28 megawatts and would provide enough electricity to meet the average annual consumption of over 13,000 households.
A Winchester restaurant has raised more than £550 for charity. The Bangkok Brasserie in Drury Street raised the cash for Brendan Care with a traditional Thai banquet. Emma Digence, head of fundraising at Brendan Care, said, "We know the economic pressures people are under at the moment, so we can't thank the Bangkok Brasserie enough for their support and to everyone who turned out and donated so generously." It was organised by volunteers John Larish and Dorothy Trinder, while Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Frank and Anne Pearson, attended. The next Brendan Care fundraiser takes place on Sunday, December the 16th, with a Christmas concert at Winchester College.
Backing the Basics Bank. Residents of a homeless hostel in Winchester are stepping out for charity. 15 men and women who live at Westview House, Hyde, want to donate toys and gifts to Winchester Basics Bank to give to families in need this Christmas. Residents who suffer from drug, alcohol and mental health problems came up with the idea of a sponsored walk to give something back to the organisation which provides them with essential food supplies and clothes several times a year. Residents and staff will set off from King Alfred's statue in the Broadway for a 4-mile hike along the River Itchen on Thursday, November the 29th. Project worker Molly Edwards said, "Basics Bank is fantastic service and we are keen to raise awareness of homelessness and poverty in our area and bring some joy into people's lives around the Christmas period." People can donate at www.justgiving.com/Westview Basics Bank or by text to donate £10, text DEOC 76 £10 to 770. That is text DEOC 76 £10 to 770.
Police complete headquarters deal. Hampshire Police have sealed the deal to buy Mottisfont Court from the County Council. The £1.5 million purchase was completed on Monday following exchange of contracts on November the 9th. Mottisfont Court in High Street will be the new police headquarters, replacing the current headquarters in Romsey Road. It's the first major acquisition of the estate development programme to reflect the reduced budget. Refurbishment of Mottisfont Court will start next year and it should be completed by up to 200 headquarters staff by the end of 2013.
Barton Stacey Photo Call. Residents of Barton Stacey are invited to a Hampshire Chronicle photo call next week. The Chronicle is staging a group photo on Saturday, December the 1st, at the Village Recreation Ground at 10:30 a.m. as part of a special feature on the village to go in the paper on December the 6th. Anyone from the village who would like to contribute to the coverage can contact reporter Joseph Curtis on 01962 890755. 01962 890755.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Mary Mitchell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week. Please post your memory sticks back in a yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you've finished listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.